Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 2:08 PM and that is Central Time. Today is November 11th and I thought we'd kick off with gold but redenominated into yen because it is really not all that far away from testing the all-time peaks. And we have a very well-defined range that persisted from about 2012 through to 2019, so a very lengthy period of consolidation and then a very clear breakout and then a subsequent pullback to test the upper side of the range in 2020 and then a pop again on the upside. This looks like just a longer consolidation in a secular bull market because relative to the yen, gold has been appreciating in an uninterrupted fashion since about 1999, and there's no sign that it's ended. So Japan, more than any other developed market, looks like they want to devalue their currency, and the yen continues to trend lower and the dollar trend higher here. The dollar has clearly broken a six-year sequence of lower rally highs. So there's an orderly consolidation in the region of the trend mean, and it looks like it's breaking on the upside. So Japan is certainly going to buck the trend of central banks beginning to toy with the idea of raising interest rates. The other big piece of news that came through in China today was that there's increasing speculation that some of the restrictions that have been imposed upon the real estate sector are going to be relaxed. So the CSI 300 was up over 1% and bouncing from the lower side of its range, and the CSI 300 real estate index was up in a dynamic manner again. So we've had a couple of different moves here over the course of the last couple of months. Some dynamic moves on the upside and on the downside, but it's continuing to hold this 6,000 level. And of course, in here today, we saw that the sixth plenum is pretty much ensuring that Xi Jinping is going to get his wish of uninterrupted power. That removes at least a tad of political uncertainty, and it frees up the potential, at least, that some of the most dire restrictions that have been imposed upon the real estate sector will be relaxed. It doesn't mean that we're moving back into the laissez-faire, free-wheeling environment that the property developers enjoyed for the last 20 or even 30 years, but I think they will be supplied with sufficient liquidity to ensure that the majority of these companies don't in fact go bust. Then obviously one of the most troubled is China Evergrande, and the share was up in here today, but it's got, I think, to think about recovery would be rather overly ambitious. Now, we have had some very big moves in bond markets over the course of the last couple of days. And the bond markets shut today because of the Veterans Day. It's a market holiday. But we can see from the futures that the price continued lower. So bond yields continuing to push higher. This, I think, is particularly interesting that we have bond yields pushing higher. We have the dollar index, which is continuing to advance, and we still have gold prices that are still going up. So what we have, in fact, is some evidence that gold is taking on some safe haven aspects or characteristics relative to treasuries. And this is something that some of the biggest bulls of gold have been predicting for decades, and it hasn't really occurred on all that many occasions, but it is happening right now. And we're in an environment where gold is being valued or revalued as a hard asset. So I think this is important because We had the big downside Q reversal yesterday from Bitcoin. And the price was a little bit steadier in here today, but not in an especially convincing manner. So we haven't had downside follow through on the downside Q reversal. And this is still a pretty orderly consolidation in the region of the all-time peaks. So provided it continues to hold this break above the $60,000 area, and most particularly the lows put in towards the end of October around 57,000, then we can give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. We've had a very impressive move, a doubling from July through to the end of October. And that is in advance of the introduction of the Taproot protocol tomorrow. Now, the last time we had one of these big software updates for Bitcoin was back in 2017. The price had doubled ahead of SegWit being introduced, and then it tripled subsequently. So when we hear these prognostications about where people think the price is going to be in January, and I've seen a number of predictions that it's going to be somewhere around $250,000, well, that's what they are using to make that prediction. So obviously that's one of the reasons why people have been anxious to buy. But then if that is going to come to fruition, it will at least need to sustain the breakout. So we're in a rather interesting environment right now. And of course, we still have a lot of competition between the backers of Bitcoin and the backers of Ethereum. And Ethereum also had a downside Q reversal yesterday, but it has rebounded in a more impressive manner in here today, and it's still holding the sequence of higher reaction lows. So this is still a reasonably consistent advance overall. Now, when we think about how stock markets are performing against this background, well, the NASDAQ is in positive territory today, but off the initial high. And we've had five consecutive days really on the downside. And I think that it's likely that we're going to have some additional consolidation if bond yields continue higher. But the VIX index was in negative territory in here today. So we don't have quite the same demand for options or for put options that would coincide with a more dramatic pullback just yet. However, I think as interest rates begin to rise, it's going to take a toll on the most interest rate sensitive portion of the market. And there's a good number of those types of companies in the NASDAQ. And we continue to see that there are extraordinary sums being paid for companies that don't have sales. So Rivian is a good example of that. The IPO was 2 days ago. The share is up to 120 from an initial value of 75. And it's still being viewed as a positive. And it now has a market cap greater than Ford. Or it, in fact, it's probably more than that, probably bigger than some of the other companies now too. And Ford's market cap has gone up substantially in the last 18 months. So when we think about this rather illogical state of affairs, well, the ability of companies to source significant funding in the order of billions, and where they can approach market caps that are among the largest companies in the world, well, then that's very much dependent on low interest rates and massive availability of liquidity persisting indefinitely. So that might yet be the case, because the reality is that central banks are just not in a position to raise interest rates, and they're doing a very good game of talking about it. And obviously inflationary pressures are ramping higher here and making international headlines. And all of that is against a background where we've had massive issuance of debt over the course of the last 18 months, and the issue of servicing costs is going to become a clear and present worry for governments if interest rates do begin to rise. So then it's probably an interesting time to start thinking about emerging markets because, generally speaking, emerging markets have a longer history of dealing with inflationary pressures and they don't have quite the same debt burdens. And where they do have big debt burdens, they also have high growth rates, so they have the potential to grow their way out from underneath a debt burden. Indonesia is starting to push up and out of this range in local currency terms, but even if we redenominate the index to US dollars, then it's also pushing up to test the highs from the course of this range that's been forming for a decade in local currency, excuse me, in US dollar terms. In local currency terms, we had a significant devaluation of the rupiah between 2011 and really about 2018. So that flattered the appreciation of the currency or of the stock market in local currency terms, but not from the perspective of an international investor. So these are, I think, important considerations because these indices that have got higher growth companies and higher growth economies, improving standards of governance and reasonably steady currencies, they're starting to push on the upside. We've seen a substantial number of these extremely lengthy base formations being completed over the course of the last few years. Taiwan is a very good example of that. It ranged for 30 years and then broke out in emphatic fashion. And South Korea is another example, and the Korean won has been notably weak of late, and it's being weighed down by Samsung. So Samsung and South Korea generally, they're big companies, and it's a pretty large economy as well. It's often viewed as a bellwether for the global economy because it's the 11th largest economy in the world, and generally people only tend to look at the top 10. But the South Korean won is certainly trending lower, and the stock market is being weighed upon by Samsung. So Samsung is not able to keep up with the demand for its products and is being impacted by competition. But of course, then the devaluation of the yen is also encouraging South Korea to devalue the won because that's their closest and most direct competitor. And as the Japanese yen is devalued, then that should act as a tailwind for the Japanese stock market. The Nikkei has been ranging now for most of the last year, and the second section index is still holding steady in the region of the peak from back in 2018, but it does look like just a consolidation, and it would need to be pulling back below the trend mean in order to question that conclusion. Now, as we look at Europe and the UK, the FTSE 100 was in additional positive territory in here today. I do think that we are in a bifurcating market and that it is the robust cash flows and better positioned global growth type companies, or those that are levered to the growth of the global consumer, are likely to do better as we approach the end of the year and higher interest rates overall. The kinds of companies with strong balance sheets that can fund their own growth without having to go out and borrow a lot of money are likely to do better. And the extremely interest rate sensitive portion of the market is going to start to experience stress as we see interest rates start to push up and inflation start to force interest rates higher. Now, oil prices, having had the downside key yesterday, did not follow through on the downside in here today. So far it's still a consolidation, and it will need to break below $80 in order to confirm a return to demand dominance. think a good part of the reason why oil prices have been steadier is because of geopolitical tensions. The USA has warned Europe that Russia is amassing troops on the border of the Ukraine. So there's obviously the threat of an invasion. And then there's the whole controversy with Belarus and the threat that they will allow large numbers of refugees to flow through into the EU as well. So that's putting upward pressure on natural gas in Europe. And of course, this is a particularly opportune time for Russia to do something because they have Europe in a very vulnerable position, and there's not really an awful lot that Europe can do if Russia decides to invade Ukraine or to take a bigger portion of the country for itself. So that's helping to support natural gas prices, and this is still an environment where it's going to encourage countries to become energy independent, because it's not simply about supply and reliability of supply, but it's about how the dependence on imports can be used as a geopolitical weapon. And Europe in particular certainly must feel the stress from that condition. So the wind ETF is still pulling back, and it's mostly European companies that are in this ETF. So this is one of the big challenges that Europe needs to become energy independent, and yet a number of the renewable energy sectors are extremely interest rate sensitive. So that has to be contrasted with the continued reasonably strong environment that we have in the uranium sector. The UK is championing small modular reactors, and France is also championing their own domestic nuclear sector and looking to develop small modular reactors. So it's increasingly likely that portions of Europe are going to continue to support the evolution of nuclear energy, even as other parts of Europe remain very leery of it. And of course, what this is going to do is create some internal strife. But ultimately, these pieces of technology will get built in various areas around the world. Rolls-Royce has secured one of those contracts from the UK government, and the share is consolidating now above the almost 2-year base formation, and this continues to look like a recovery candidate overall. It's one of the champions of British industry. It's not like they're going to allow the company to go bust. And when we see continued numbers of flights go through, well, then the servicing contracts for all those engines in all those planes will translate into significant additional upside for Rolls-Royce as a servicing partner for airlines. And with the opening up of the airlines or the airways into the USA, well, then that's likely to be beneficial for earnings for the airline companies. So we've seen a significant firming from the lower side of the range. Now, if oil prices start to come back down, it will translate into a significant tailwind for the airline sector. So it is almost like a put option on the oil price overall. As we then think about where all this is going, well, I think there is the potential for a rotation away from fragility to robustness. And gold is leading the way, and the continued performance of Dividend Aristocrats is also supporting that view, and so are emerging markets. Now, we're not yet at a position where the Fangman shares are trending downwards. So it's still not, we don't still yet have the other side of that trade. So the relative performance of the Fangman plus Tesla shares have pulled back from the upper side of the range. Now, if for any reason it pulls back below the trend mean, then that's going to be a significant signal for selling a large portion, or I guess the large companies within the USA. When we think about the smaller caps, well, just how well they do is largely going to be dependent on the outlook for growth and interest rates, but at least they don't have the large cap companies within the index. So we're in an interesting scenario because of this rising interest rate environment. And ultimately, we're going to get to a position where it's going to come from push to shove with the central banks and interest rates. And how willing are they going to be to act to prevent inflation rather than to respond in kind to inflationary pressures? Because in previous cycles, they acted to prevent inflation. And right now, they are willing to let inflation run. And it's quite likely we're going to be in a negative real interest rate environment for the lengthy medium term. I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.